Welcome to Girl, You're Hired, a job interviewing tips podcast solely dedicated to helping you land your dream job. My name is Lena and I'm your podcast host. On today's episode, I have such an exciting guest to bring on. His name is Jay Fang and he has a lot of experience in the data science world. He's worked at many companies like Monster, Nextdoor. He has a trending YouTube channel called Data Science Jay. And now he started his own company, Interview Query, where he helps people just like you guys land your dream job in data science. So I'm going to hand it over to Jay to introduce himself. Thanks for being with us, Jay.
Thanks for having me. Yeah. And so, hi everyone. My name is Jay. I've worked in data science for about 6 years now. About 2.5 years ago, decided to quit and start my own company and bootstrap it from the ground up with my co-founder. And now it is the company that you know of today, Interview Query. Basically like a data science platform that helps you with learning data science specifically for the interview. So if you have an interview coming up, you can go to interviewquery.com and sign up and practice problems, do take-home assignments, do mock interviews with coaches, and hopefully ace your interview.
Amazing. So impressive. And your footprint on the job interviewing search process is really in so many different ways on the internet, like even on Medium, you have so many insightful articles. And something I actually recently read that really stood out that I'd love for you to share with listeners is the process of actually emailing recruiters and interacting with them to get guidance. Can you tell me a little bit more about what that looks like?
Yeah, so I think this is a fact that not a lot of people know about how recruiters are actually on your side to try to get you through the interview process. They actually are kind of dealt with quotas on their side at these bigger tech companies where they have to meet like a minimum number of hires that they recruit every single year to kind of like stay in their job. So it's very much like sales. And so if you think about this from a perspective of a recruiter, you know, when they reach out to you, they're really interested in getting you through the process. And at the same time, they're also kind of vetting you. But if they vet you initially and they kind of like see that you're a really strong candidate, they'll do everything in their power to try to get you through the process, including, you know, kind of giving you an outline of what's going to be expected on the interview. And so a lot of candidates don't really think about this. They kind of think that, you know, it's like me versus the company. And so they don't really do like the obvious next step, which is just emailing the recruiter and asking them for, you know, what's going to be on the interview, what kind of questions you can expect, specifically for data science interviews, you know, because the subject is so broad and goes over like, you know, 10 different kinds of problems across, you know, machine learning or A/B testing. It's really hard to narrow down which one that you're actually going to get coming up because, you know, for a 45-minute interview, they're only ask you like one or two questions. And so super important, just ask your recruiter. The worst thing they can do is say no. The best thing they can do is basically give you the exact questions they're going to be on. So I always say email the recruiter, ask, you know, kind of what questions are going to come up. It can only help.
Yeah, I love that advice. I think that's super helpful because a lot of times people say luck is what lands you your dream job, but it's not. And this is just exactly one example, Jay, that you mentioned, that it's about making the most and maximizing opportunities. And speaking of maximizing opportunities, what are your thoughts on like asking for feedback after an interview, especially if potentially it wasn't an offer?
Yeah, getting interview feedback is super hard. I think one of the big problems that we're seeing is this idea of company liability. So, you know, HR departments are very defensive, you know, and if you ask for interview feedback and the person gives it to you and it's, you know, something that might potentially break the law in terms of company liability or something illegal, like they let slip, you know, something that they shouldn't have, that's a big, you know, problem for the company. And so usually what happens is the company just says, we don't give feedback at all, right? To completely erase that, you know, problem. I think a lot of the times you're best to get feedback through, you know, startups or smaller companies. That's always a chance that you can get some feedback from the interviewer or from the company. It's just the same thing with a recruiter. It doesn't hurt to ask. But, you know, I think that's just the biggest problem that we've seen is that, you know, it is a huge kind of company liability issue that is hard to overcome.
Absolutely. And I don't know if you agree with me on this, Jay, but I feel like a lot of times it's not just the interview feedback we're getting, but it's what do we do with that feedback once we get it? How do we apply it to future interviews? And you as an interviewing coach, I'm wondering, like, when you give feedback to your one-on-one clients, which I know you do offer that type of service, I interview query, like, how do you tell people to internalize that feedback and make them better and actually not lower their confidence?
Definitely. Yeah, I think it requires a bit of massaging sometimes. I think some kind of interview feedback is pretty obvious. You know, I think for a couple of my one-on-one coaching sessions, the most obvious one that I just jump on is like, you know, fix your camera, fix your microphone, fix where you're actually like sitting, because all these things actually really matter. Like if I can't legibly hear you because your microphone sucks, then that's already going to knock off some points that you don't even realize. And so those are a little bit easier to deliver. But when it comes to just kind of like general improvements in technical skills or communication, this is where it's more about really trying to understand, you know, exactly why, you know, you're kind of not missing the point or missing kind of the interview question. For my clients, at least, because, you know, they're kind of putting in the money down, they really have this like idea and like motivation to improve already. And so it's usually not like a big problem. But I think general interview feedback, it is hard to hear that, you know, you might not be good at like a certain subject or something else. But all of that, I think, should be motivating factors towards getting better and, you know, doing better on the next interview as well. And so I do try to massage, you know, my words a little bit so that it does get a little bit easier to kind of take in. But at the same time, I think transparency is the key thing that we're trying to give in interview feedback, because they're not getting it in the actual interviews with companies. And so if you can give pure transparency, I think that's like the highest value reward that you can really give for, you know, any kind of candidate that you're interviewing with.
Yeah, I really like that answer. Thanks so much for elaborating. And personally, what I found is that when I did ask for feedback, it really helped me not take things personal or the wrong way. Otherwise, you make so many assumptions about why you didn't get an offer. But if you can just really know what it is, not only will it stop the cycle of insanity, you can also really improve on that and really know what the issue was. Otherwise, you'll start building on insecurities and thinking it's because of this, it's because of that. And that's not really taking us a healthy place. So thanks so much for that tip. And, you know, speaking of being open to asking questions, you know, we talked about asking your recruiter for help. We talked about getting feedback at the end of the interview, but can you tell us a little bit more about your advice when asking questions during an interview, whether it's like during a face-to-face interview or Zoom interview? Like, what kind of advice do you have there on asking questions while you're being assigned to solve something on the spot?
Yeah, so I think one of the best frameworks for tackling any kind of case question or behavioral interview question many times is to clarify the question a bit. I'd say this happens more for case questions. And so when you're given like a ambiguous question task, like for example, let's say it's like how many golf balls are in an airplane or can fit into an airplane, right? This is a classic kind of case interview question for consulting or something. It's really important to just kind of clarify the structure and the scope of what you're about to tackle, right? And I think as a interviewee or a candidate, it's really important to understand, you know, how much you actually want to answer in this whole situation. And so, for example, if I go back to that question, I would say something like, is this for, you know, what kind of plane is this for? Is this for like a big plane? Is this for a small plane? You know, what kind of size of golf balls are we thinking, right? Like, what's the expectation of like this interview? I think just being able to drill down on what the actual intention of why the interviewer is asking you this question is really important. I've seen a lot of like bad interviews where people will jump immediately into an answer, and then they completely go into a different direction that like I was trying to intend them to go. And like, even if that's like okay from their perspective or like, you know, subjectively or universally just like an okay answer, because it wasn't what I intended them to answer, it still looks bad, you know, on the candidate. And so a lot of it is about kind of playing this game and really understanding, you know, like what kind of question is this person really trying to ask, so that I can figure out how to craft the best solution for that. And it always helps to ask clarifying questions in the very beginning of any one of these interviews, because it's all about understanding what the goal is from the interviewer.
Yeah, such a powerful example. And I actually brought me back to my days interviewing at LinkedIn. They did ask me something about how many tennis balls are sold each year. So People think those questions are outdated, but they actually are still on the market. So that is really important. And I love what you said about like the expectation you should be asking. And I think what I've seen as well, tell me if you think the same, is like, if you're not asking questions in an interview, questioning things, wondering, taking a step further, being really exact with your answer, that's going to reflect on your work. If when your boss assigns you a job, you're not just going to say yes and just start doing something, right? So to me, it seems really similar to that concept that they're trying to see if you think strategically about solving problems. So thanks for bringing that example up. That was a really good case. My other question for you, Jay, is about meeting minimum qualifications. So since this podcast really is centered around women and making them more confident to go into data science as a field, which recently I looked up the statistics, there actually is only around 18% of data science women in the field. So it's obviously still a big minority, but another old statistic, and maybe this has already been updated, but like men will still apply for a promotion or a job if they've met 60% of the qualifications, whereas women really want to check off all the boxes. So advice can you give to women as they're interviewing in a male-dominated field with this kind of misconception already that, you know, we need to be perfect, we need to have everything to go for it? Can you add your two cents on that?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, qualifications in general is just kind of like such a ambiguous kind of term. You know, if you look at them right now, and it's like, you know, 2 to 5 years of experience for an entry-level role, right? You have to, you know, do these X number of things, you have to have these X number of skills. To me, like, I would do away with this whole idea of just like having qualifications specifically, unless it was something very obvious where it's like, oh, you need to be a manager or something else. I mean, the study is really interesting. And I think honestly, for women, they should just do what, you know, kind of fits them best with what the men are doing. Honestly, I mean, I would just apply to any sort of job if I felt like I had the qualification for it personally. At the same time, I think a lot of these things are being kind of rules are being rewritten in terms of just having the qualification, even just applying through the normal methods. I think just like networking, talking to like friends, talking to meeting people is like a much better way to get jobs as well. And so, you know, I do think like, you know, across all these different kinds of stats, it is really hard to figure out why, you know, certain things are happening. But I think specifically for applying to jobs, I definitely think it's time to break the mold and just get jobs like different sorts of ways, and mainly to like use what you can to your advantage. I think, you know, specifically networking is like hugely advantageous towards anyone versus just applying into like a black hole of a job posting, and should be like the primary way to like get a job from now on.
I think that that's a really good way to put it. And when you mentioned all these good ways of getting jobs, like you said, a referral, and, you know, kind of trying to tackle things from different angles. One thing that I really was impressed with your strategy of helping people is actually sending them those questions to solve for every day. So tell us a little bit more about those. Some of the listeners on here specifically want to practice, obviously, data science questions and come most prepared. So tell us about your outlook on like one question a day, or that process of like breaking habits and building habits. Would love to hear about that.
Yeah, I mean, solving a question every single day, I think, is more so about building a habit towards getting better at something. And, you know, for us, like, we decided to build out like our question email to send like a question once a week, once a day, based on like your preferences, because of the fact that people really enjoy that kind of like bite-sized problem to try to really attempt and get better at something. And so if you think about an interview question as being around like 30 minutes to an hour, if you can just sit down and discipline yourself to like solving a question for 30 minutes to an hour a day, it really helps with just getting better at stuff throughout tackling harder and harder things, right? And so if we can incrementally make that question even harder for you, then that's awesome, because now you're incrementally getting better at solving harder and harder questions within the same amount of time. And so it's kind of like the same habit where, you know, people will tell you to make your bed in the morning, or, you know, kind of stick to like a general routine. It just really helps for like developing that problem solving muscle in your head. And it's not like right out of the gate, you can just, you know, bench you know, 500 pounds, you know, if you're at a gym or something like that, or run like a marathon, right? You have to incrementally go at it. And that's kind of what we think about with solving a problem every day. You do this for like, you know, a whole year. And by the end of the year, you're solving like a really, really hard problem, right? And so I just think it's like, it's a great habit to build. If you have a goal to set to like pass the interview, it's a really easy way to do so. If you're not like, you know, trying to pass an interview, then, you know, it might just be more of an intellectual challenge, and of which, you know, that could be fun as well. But generally, I think, you know, solving problems, doing this kind of positive habits really does kind of help with long-term, just like habit forming, getting better at data science or coding or any other kind of problem you're trying to achieve, and also eventually achieving your goal of passing an interview.
Yeah, no, I really like what you said there about when the time comes to do it for real, it's going to be so much easier because you've been using that, you know, muscle in your brain every day. And I think it's the same in a lot of different parts of interviewing, not just for data science, like mock interviews and recording yourself talking to me have been huge game changers in interviewing space. I actually started learning how to review my own voice and pitches when I was at Google and having to talk to customers and listening to my conversations, and then with mock interviews. And I know you do that as well. Can you talk a little bit more about the power of actually listening to yourself after an interview? Is that something that you also should suggest from your side of things?
Yeah, definitely. It's something that we do for our coaching sessions, actually. So we, if the candidates want to, we will record the coaching sessions, and then so that they can have them on copy, just so they can go back and kind of review their answers and also review the coach's feedback at the same time. But I think, you know, it's pretty much the same with, you know, learning anything, is that you really do have to like go back and kind of review what you sound like and what you look like. And it's going to be completely different than what you think you sound like almost every single time that you do it, at least in the first few times. I think there's a lot of little intricacies that you can get, because it's always easier, you know, to critique someone else than to critique yourself. But that's mostly because of the fact that you don't have like a video recording, or you don't watch yourself every single day when you're doing every single action. And so it's, you know, personally, I think we're all about, you know, building these kind of feedback loops that help us get better. And the best way that you can do that is to actually just watch, you know, a video of yourself. I mean, I'm doing this right now for something completely different, for snowboarding in Utah right now. I watched a video of myself going off a jump, just realized my positioning was off, just realized I didn't like how I looked. But at the same time, it's super helpful, because now I know what to change about my body and what to do differently. And so I think it's just super helpful, no matter what, to look at recordings of yourself. It is cringeworthy at first. I definitely felt that way when I was doing YouTube, and I just did not want to watch my videos over again. But eventually learned how to deal with it. And then it was basically so easy. I just like didn't even think about it now, in which I now hear my own voice and listen to myself speak.
Absolutely. I know exactly what you mean. And I love that you're applying that learning method to the snowboarding part. I think all of our lives are so intermingled, like what we, our passions and our learning tactics, everything is interconnected. So it's definitely a best practice for our listeners to keep in mind. And I know we're almost at time here, because I do want to keep this episode snackable, shareable, but I always like kind of wrapping things off on like a last tip, an insider tip from the person coming onto the show. So Jay, my question is for you. What's like a tip you have for people that might not be so obvious for their interview?
Yeah, I would say that if you have a technical interview, or you're going to be facing kind of a case question, or honestly, if you're just tackling any sort of interview coming up, the best thing that you can do is actually do a little bit of research about the company. And talk about that afterwards when you're asked about, like, if you have any questions about the company at the end, which they always ask. And the reason for this is because it really shows that you have the company's interests in mind. And so if you know what, like, the company's problems are, if you know what they're, like, trying to tackle, you yourself can kind of think about solutions that will help with this. Obviously, you have to think about it within a scope, right? Like, for example, let's say that you're showing up to, you know, interview for an Amazon, you know, supply chain business or something like that. You're not going to be talking about, you know, Amazon Prime solutions, you know, in your interview. You want to focus it around, you know, Amazon supply chain in itself. But specifically, you know, if you just think about like the problems that the interviewer is having to solve on a day-to-day basis, you research their role, you understand what they're responsible for, then you're showing that you're already like doing the work to want the job, and you're already doing the work for the job just in the interview yourself. And so I just think it's like, it's a huge tip. I don't see this enough when I interview candidates. I want more people to do research before they actually jump into interviews. I know it's hard because, you know, these things are, you know, difficult, but it's not just about, you know, answering the questions that they give you correctly. It's more so about showcasing an interest, kind of like putting in that extra effort. And the best way to do that is to, you know, try to solve the business problems before you actually jump on the interview.
Yeah, that's huge. I love that tip. And I've seen it so usefully applied in my past too. I mean, at LinkedIn, they asked me, like, how does LinkedIn make money? It's not just a premiums, you know, there's LinkedIn sales solution, LinkedIn marketing solutions. And then I Googled, one of the questions was, if you were advising the CEO, like, what advice would you give him? So it's usually not just about your role, right? It's about the bigger company and how can you strategize and add value to the company with your unique ideas. That's what they look for as well, I think, in those questions. And if you can already come and bring them up on your own, that's going to be a huge way to stand out and really look like someone who's going to move the needle and do big things at the company and isn't just coming to do their 9-to-5, right?
Definitely. Yeah. And I think those questions also help demonstrate this feeling of initiative, right? So if, you know, you have this kind of initiative towards already trying to solve these problems beforehand, if you already understand how LinkedIn makes money, then they showcase that, you know, that you've done your research, you understand like what the core business values are. And it's just like a good, what you want to see an employee. And, you know, as an employer myself now, I can see and understand, you know, why they ask certain interview questions. I'm still puzzled about, you know, other interview questions that I really hated, but I do now understand, you know, why certain interview questions get asked. And a lot of them are just to demonstrate these leadership kind of principles and see if you have them. And, you know, they're always important for any kind of employee that you hire. And so definitely, you know, encouraged to, you know, do that extra research and really think about it holistically.
Absolutely. Amazing. Well, thank you so much for everything. Just so grateful for Jay that he's putting such amazing content out there with his interview query questions per day. So feel free to go check them out on his website, interviewquery.com, and tune in for more episodes. And also feel free to connect with Jay on LinkedIn. And thank you guys so much for your time today. It's been a pleasure having you, Jay. Thank you for joining us and adding so much value.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This has been fun.